Hello, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and the belated Shana Tova to our Jewish friends out there. A little bit late, but, you know, Happy New Year, y'all.
Almost a week late, but that's
yes.
Okay.
Yes, no, that's all right. We need to recognize the holidays, right?
Ideally, yes. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest in the news from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we also sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be a double dose. We have Mark Paralovas of the People's Party, who will be at the bottom of the hour. But first, we are going to have our chat with Gordon Truscott of the Christian Heritage Party, who is sitting right here immediately to my right. Gordon, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem at all.
I want to start with just sort of, it's been a while since we've had a Christian Heritage Party candidate in Guelph. I think Peter Ellis ran the last time in 2006. It's been a while. And so, you know, what made you want to step up and get involved, and why is the Christian Heritage Party your party?
Well, Peter Ellis was a good candidate, that's for sure. And he and Hank Metzler, a Dutch Christian, were very active in the Christian Heritage Party. And over the years, which is more than 25 years, I've seen people who have been exemplary in how they've lived their lives. And I thought that it's time to see if people are interested in Christian values coming into politics, which is why the party was started by Ed Van Woudenberg in 1987, when Dutch Christians especially could not find a political party that represented their values.
Assume I am not non-denominational, let's say. I hate to phrase it like this, but, you know, in terms of Dutch Christians versus other Christians, you know, where's the separation there?
Okay, Hank Metzler was in the Second World War.
Right.
And he was captured and ordered by the Germans to go to a town in Germany for retraining, so that he would work for the Germans for the rest of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And as he pointed out, he lost his way. So he joined the Dutch resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of times he came over a hill and there were German soldiers there with guns. And if he didn't say the right thing, he wouldn't have survived. He went on and had six children, 18 grandchildren, and 21 great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And his widow, Akka, just died 5 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
At 101 years of age.
Oh, wow.
She also, I only found out recently, she also was in the Dutch resistance. And when you have people who live through an oppressive time, and then they come to Canada and they latch on to the Christian Heritage Party, you have to wonder, well, why would they do that? Now, he used to regularly write letters into the Guelph Mercury that were published and was certainly quite active in the Christian Heritage Party, trying to get more people as members and drum up support. So when, you know, I spent so many years with him, and we edited a paper together, The Motivator, which went into his church and other churches. And I mean, there's just been so many things that have gone on that told me that it's once again time. You see, I ran in the year 2000 against Brenda Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah.
So it's time now to run once again, only this is a very vigorous campaign. I've got more than 400 signs throughout the city.
We've seen some of them.
I've got I've got advertising on three different radio stations. Not this one yet. Nobody's approached me, I guess. And then I've got an ad out in the Guelph Tribune this week and like every week throughout the election time, and online advertising through the Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things going on.
It's a bit of a different media landscape now than it was almost 20 years ago now.
Well, it certainly is. And my best mentor, Ron Gray, who was national leader of the Christian Heritage Party for 13 years, phoned me this afternoon from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
He's 86 years of age.
Mm.
And he said that online advertising is probably the best.
Yeah. You mentioned about, you know, your faith and the importance of faith. Why does it matter to you to have sort of faith there on the ballot? You know, what why is make I don't I think phrasing it as putting making an issue is sort of the wrong way, but why is putting faith up front so important to you running as a candidate?
I just read in the Guelph Tribune for this week a three-column letter by Ryan Guile. I hope I have his name right. Anyway, he's talking about abortion, and a couple of times he says, well, I think it's this way. But if you're going to write about a subject, you better know what's going on. Now, unfortunately, women are not like little tin soldiers and easily processing for themselves the abortion process. Now, there are many who say, oh, that was no problem at all. But it's not as though women are giving birth to an apple or a lemon. That's a human being. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it weighs on their consciences. And you get any number of after effects of sleeplessness and panic attacks and suicidal feelings and inability to conceive again for some. But often the most common is that the next birth is premature. And anyway, for those who are struggling with having had an abortion, we'd like to partner with them. And anonymously, they would go and choose a counselor and pay whatever they're able to put in. And as the federal government, we would pay the rest, because we can't go around having hundreds of thousands of women who are damaged by their abortion experience and just say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. And that's where faith comes in. You care for other people, even when, you know, we would disagree that a woman should have an abortion. But having had one, there should be counseling available to help her to get back to some semblance of where she was at before.
Right. I think, though, that maybe there's a bit of a disconnect, though, because I'm looking it up right now. I mean, there are risks to any procedure, but I don't think that we're talking about hundreds of thousands of women who are suffered permanent side effects from an abortion.
No, but these are psychological.
Well,
side
I think I think that's included, though.
Oh no! We want to believe that women can do this and there's no problem. They just go on with their lives. They don't have any difficulties. But you should check with the organization Silent No More. Women who have decided to come forward and say, hey, this didn't work for us.
And we
as an organization advise that women not have abortions.
So where does your data come from on that? Like, is it faith-based or is it medical? Or is there a crossover?
No,
there's
everything, yes. I mean, I've been involved for 20
like medical
years.
Medical doctors on staff.
There's my friend Linda Gibbons, who had an abortion.
Is she a doctor?
She's a woman who had an abortion.
Oh, no. The question was, you're obviously...
There's the book Complications. There's another book, After Effects of Abortion.
That's great, but where's the
where our studies
data
are done,
from?
which are extensive. I should have brought those in, I suppose.
You should have, actually. We would have liked to have seen that, but...
This is the book Complications, A Surgeon's Notes on... I found it on Amazon, actually. A Surgeon's Notes on Imperfect Science by Atul Gawande.
I'm not familiar with that one.
No?
M.D.
Okay. Well, he did get a 2002 National Book Award finalist, but I mean, this we could be confusing books. But I guess this comes to, I mean, for you it's a matter of faith. It's, you know, this is a matter of your moralistic belief. And I think we talked about this before, that, you know, the Christian Heritage Party, if... How many candidates, first of all, are still running for the Christian Heritage?
We have 50 candidates.
Okay, well, that's impressive.
And well, it took a while to get those, but
but you know, if there was to even just like maybe having, let's say, the balance of power in a minority government situation, we're still talking about a country that is secular, and you know, how do you balance leading by faith and leading by your own moral code with a country that has everybody sort of has their own moral code, including people who have no faith.
When I did my master's degree, unfortunately, there was a woman by the name of Joanne Chisholm who had been in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
And a man came across the median, ran into her car, killed her mother, killed her sister, and left her permanently with a tracheotomy in her neck. So she talked like this because she couldn't talk fully the way that she wanted to.
Right, yeah.
So that happened because of alcohol. Well, now we are throwing into the mix marijuana. So some people will be injured because of people driving vehicles under the influence of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And Mothers Against Drunk Driving, for example, are you know, cautioning about this too.
Right.
So, like, that's where our faith comes in to say, well, what are we going to be doing about this? Because the more that we're selling marijuana, I mean, for years, we took cigarettes and we taxed them as much as possible. And we put them in horrible packaging. and now we put them behind shelves so that nobody can see them.
Right.
Okay? And you can ask for them. But anyway, so we did that with cigarettes in order to cut down on the number of people smoking. But now the government has wholesale adopted, we're going to be selling marijuana,
mm-hmm.
which is comparable in terms of its effective on the human being. So, like, well, what's going on there? That doesn't make any sense.
So your party would shut that down? Is that the plan? Like,
no, there's a lot of things that have come into society, and you can't really just shut them down. But,
no, but when, you know, it's legalized. Say you had the balance of power. Would your party say shut that whole system down that's been built up?
Recriminalize, I think.
Yeah, recriminalize it.
Well, no, it wouldn't be recriminalized, but we would.
That's pretty progressive.
We would perhaps increase the cost of people getting marijuana.
Mm.
Take Elizabeth May, who wants to decriminalize all drugs. Mm. Have any drug you want, anything, you know. And well, what's that actually doing in people's bodies, and how is that affecting the rest of society?
Right.
Well, it keeps people out of jail, for one thing, but...
Well, I think that's her goal, is to keep people out of jail. But, I mean, by that token, like, anything can be a drug. Like, you can eat too much cake. That's a drug. You eat too much
well,
sex.
Well, yeah, that's how many people get damaged because their friend ate too much cake?
Well, I mean...
It's the cake with marijuana.
Coronary disease, yeah. Diabetes. I mean, that could be it, too. Make it an edible.
Yes. No. We're not legalistic like that. No.
Sure.
In fact, most things, and Rod Gray once pointed this out, we have draft legislation. And we would put it out to people and say, is this what you want?
Mm.
And if they said yes, then we would try to get that passed. And if not, we would say, well, what do you want to change? Because there would only be a few things that we would say, well, this is what we find significant as Christians.
Mm.
But the rest of things in society, we're trying to work for the good of others. Now, at the last all candidates meeting, it was pointed out that you could have a savings account, which is a Christian Heritage Party idea, where there'd be 5% for each worker and 5% from the employer every year.
And
that would be built up in
the
savings account that the worker would have control of. And when this was done in Chile, people became fantastically wealthy.
That would be put towards retirement, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
But, I mean, along the way, you're building up your savings account and choosing how to invest it.
That would, I think, I mean, that's one of those things I think that everybody can sort of agree in. You know, I think no matter the stripes, we all agree people need more financial security in their older age. People are living longer and the pension just isn't enough. And I think people everywhere agree that, you know, more control over their own money.
There's another idea
that
came from an organization outside of the CHP, but it seemed to be worth adopting.
And you got dinged on your phone there.
Yeah, I got dinged on my phone. Oh, it's my sister. Look at that.
Oh, okay.
How's she doing?
I don't know. I'll find out in a while.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so the fair tax policy mm-hmm. would do away with income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So people wouldn't be forced to, once a year, either fill out the forms themselves or get somebody to
And this
fill
is
them
a
out.
Christian Heritage policy?
You weren't listening.
Oh, wasn't
this
I?
Is started by another organization.
Oh, okay,
it's called
sorry.
Fair Tax Policy. And we looked at it and we thought, well, this looks good. Okay, so we didn't come up with this, but it's seemingly a good idea.
Okay.
Okay? So you don't have anybody cheating on their taxes because guess what? You don't have any income tax. You pay, wow, say 5% or 7% or whatever it is that's necessary that goes on to the sales tax.
Right.
Okay? So then the more that you buy, the more tax you pay. If you don't buy very much in a year, then you don't pay very much tax. So you are in control of the tax that you pay.
Hmm.
Isn't that a novel idea?
It is, but the first thing I thought of, though, was, like, you could take all the speed limits off the road and, you know, then no one's speeding, and you're sort of leaving it to people to decide what the safe speed is, and people have different...
Well, yeah, but that's altogether different.
In
a year, you have to buy certain necessities, right? And you'd pay the tax on that. But if you go out and buy a new car and you get a swimming pool and you buy a cottage and you buy lots of other things, then you're paying more tax.
I think that's... You would say that's a fairly progressive idea.
In some ways, yeah. I mean...
You're my barometer for what's...
I try, yeah. But, you know, income tax is that 100-year-old idea that was supposed to be temporary, as everybody always says, to pay for World War I, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so, okay, so in lieu of income tax, then how does the government generate revenue? You're saying consumption taxes are the way to go?
Yeah, it's a consumption
like GST,
tax.
Like GST, but higher?
Yes, that's right. Okay.
So in that respect, it's almost like a wealth tax as well. So if you were buying big ticket items like
really
$5 million
mansion. Stuff, then that's your choice.
But no income tax for anyone.
There would be no federal income tax. So you wouldn't have to fill out forms.
Wow.
Mm. Well, who likes filling out forms in April? I'm just saying.
Well, that's just it, yes.
I do want to give you praise because I think you won a lot of people in the social justice debate. And we talked about this in a separate thing earlier this week. But, you know, Christian Heritage Party, I guess, has a certain image with when you're talking about people who would go to a social justice debate. But, I mean, you seem to win a lot of people over. I'm not to say that maybe they're going to vote for you. Maybe they will. But, I mean... You seem to bring a certain sort of folksy charm to those proceedings that I think made a lot of people look at you twice. How do you feel it went?
Well, I think you have to understand what Christian means in this sense.
Okay.
Okay? We get a lot of Jewish people and Muslims and people of other faiths because they know that we are the best support for them because as we're protecting our own interests, we're protecting those of other faith groups.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you're saying they vote for you? When you say you get people, they're voting?
Yeah, they vote for us, yes.
Do you have any candidates that aren't Christian?
No, you have to be.
So you have to be a Christian candidate, but you're saying you have a fairly open tent and you're welcoming.
Yeah, we do, and we serve the needs of everyone, basically. I mean, we serve agnostics and atheists and, you know, and definitely, we are not out to make people Christian. You can't make people Christian. Mm. A lot of times I wonder if I'm Christian myself. But no, it's true, you know.
Well, in what way? Tell us, give us an example of that. What makes you not Christian? You're running for the Christian Heritage Party.
I should have been reading the Bible this morning. I've read the Bible through 15 times.
So you know it pretty well then.
And I should have been reading this morning. I wanted to do that. and I should pray more. You know, I'm thinking, well, things are going along pretty good, you know.
There is a campaign, too, so there's a lot to do.
Well, and there is, yes. And when I'm running it pretty much by myself, I mean, there have been more people coming on and helping out, and that's been refreshing, too. But it almost seems that this campaign is running itself, you know, that I know what to do at each stage. Yesterday, I printed up 62,550 brochures to go out to be mailed to each household in Guelph.
Wow.
$13,518, maxing out most of my credit cards, for goodness sake. You know?
That's a lot of pamphlets.
Well, it is, but
So you're pretty much funding your own campaign?
Well, yes, but people
you
have
take
to.
You donations, obviously.
Yeah, people have to at some point donate.
I would hope so at that price.
Yeah, you know, that's right, too. But anyway, in order to be demonstrating that I'm caring, I mean, I have to get a brochure to everybody, otherwise, even if they throw it out, otherwise, well, what am I doing? I'm not caring. I'm just, you know, trying to get elected. Mm. And I don't want to be elected. I don't really want
what?
To. No, I don't want to sit in.
That's everybody runs to win, Bork. Come on.
Well, I run to win, but I don't want to sit with 337 other people and in the House of Commons and sit there and listen to them talk, and I don't get a chance to say much of anything.
Right.
Okay? And so, you know.
I'm disappointed. I thought.
Well, I'm disappointed too. You know? But nonetheless, I mean, if I'm elected, then I'll certainly be there, and I'll be serving the interests of people. And a lot of people would say that if I'm their friend, they've got a real treasure, a real person that's caring for their interests. Mm. Just like when the other night I knocked on my friend's door at 3 in the morning, and he wasn't answering. So I phoned him.
I wonder why.
And he said,
it's like an Amber Alert.
And he said, seriously, you know? And I said, yes. And I had something to talk about. So we got together and we talked. But he was also working late. Mm. And he could have been up at that time. As it turns out, he wasn't. But he realized that, well, yeah, when you have a need and your friend comes, then you talk it out.
Are you a night owl? You seem like a night owl.
Well, I can be. I was.
That's how those signs get up at him.
Yeah, well,
that's
it. I'm wondering.
I was up two nights from two in the morning till 8. Funny you should mention that. They had me at the W.C. Wood Company where I worked. They called me Batman. So I wore a shirt in that I was Batman, and that silenced them for a while. But anyway, two nights I was up from 2 in the morning till 8 putting up signs. Mm-hmm. And it's quiet then. And I met this man. He was had been a diplomat for Canada. Okay, so he worked in other countries as a liaison. And he had grown up for 17 years, forced to go to Sunday school and church, and so he would never be a Christian.
Right.
Okay? And he said that Christianity, or that religion, not Christianity, religion caused half of the problems in the world. And you know what he did? He signed my nomination papers. Huh. And I thought, well, look at that. You know, like, I mean, here's somebody you wouldn't expect to sign your nomination papers, but he did. And well, that was about 3 o'clock in the morning as well.
So. I was going to say, was it 3 in the morning? It was 3 in the morning. Yeah. There you go. Yes. The all-night Tim's.
Uh-huh. Right. How did you know?
Because that's where the action is at 3 in the morning.
We were just outside Tim's when that happened. There you
go.
Yes.
That's all the good deals go
well,
down
what else
there.
Is open at and 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, no, nothing.
Yeah.
The hospital.
Right. The hospital, that's right.
It's open at 3 in the morning.
Now, there's another problem.
Oh.
Okay. I was 13 hours in emergency overnight at the Guelph General Hospital.
Yeah,
and was never seen by a doctor. I had to get to work the next morning, and I left having never been seen. I was seen by the nurse, okay, and they did some tests. But so I wrote to the authorities in the hospital, and they said, "Oh, we're sorry that happened. Just come back." I said, "I'm not coming back. I've already seen a doctor." After
thankfully,
this,
you didn't need a stitch or anything. So.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
So even though it's provincial, what would you do to improve the hospital system? I know we're sort of slightly off topic.
Well,
but
I spent a lot of time from personal experience at the hospital.
I spent a lot
too,
of time there, and I tell you, it's not a good scene. So
no,
as you
no, it,
as
it's
you
not. Yes,
seen.
And we have just far too many people who are sitting out in hallways or pushing out people who are already there, thinking, you know, I should be here for another day or two. But no, we need the bed. Out you go. And it's all a question of money, getting money.
Into
the system. Yeah, more money.
More resources.
Yes.
More doctors.
Now, in Fergus, my brother-in-law is the head of maintenance, and he was on the committee for building the new hospital there. Mm-hmm. How many beds? Exactly
12.
The same as before.
Oh.
Exactly the same as before. Now, sure, there's some economies, you know, because of new equipment or whatever, but Fergus is growing. Now, come on. Mm. There's more people that, you know, you should have more hospital beds, but they didn't do that. And to me, that's just wrong. And that's where, as Christians, we come in and we say, look, we've got to bite the bullet here and do what's right.
Mm. I feel like I want to follow that up, but I think we'd also have to wind it down. But I do want to give you an opportunity to tell people how they can learn more about you or learn more about the Christian Heritage Party. How can they find that out?
The Christian Heritage Party is easy. It's at chp.ca. And my own website is GordonCHPGuelph.com. So that's an easy way to go about that. Where my platform is for caring for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in the 1960s, and it seemed to me that we did that better then. And although we're caring for refugees, and I'm involved with that as well, you know, there are so many people who are falling through the cracks. And in the Tribune this week, it talked about people who have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember that. I was small growing up. when I was starting at Centennial CBI High School, I was one of the three smallest of 500 students. So I'm looking up at everybody else. Well, how do you think of yourself as, hey, I'm a big guy in town, you know, when you're looking up at everybody else? So I'm well aware of people who think, well, I don't count. I'm not important. I'm just one. Like, look at my wife, who's one of 1.4 billion Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Chinese people are like that, that, well, I'm not significant. You know, I'm just one of so many people at my school and one of so many people in Hong Kong and one of so many people in China. But we can't be looking at life that way because there's so much more to what will happen in our life. And you know, learn as much as you can, have as many experiences as you can, and just go for the gusto. But you have to start by believing that you are a significant person. Now, there are people. We had a problem here with suicide over the past year,
mm-hmm.
and people don't seem to understand the significance of themselves. Now, I'm one to talk because I have a bipolar condition, and when you're down, you're really down, and you're suicidal, and I have been suicidal. But I lost track that in the whole history of the world, there's never been anybody like me. And in the whole rest of humankind's life, there will never be another person. And even with cloning, I have different memories than anyone else. And so I'm unique. And if I go out there and destroy myself, well, it just tears society apart, especially those who were close to the individual, thinking, well, what could we have done? How come we missed the signs? Why didn't we know?
Gord, I think you missed your calling. I think you would be better suited as a motivational speaker than a politician. But this was fun. We loved having you on, and good luck with the rest of the campaign.
Well, thanks very much.
Okay, so that was Gordon Truscott of the Christian Heritage Party. We are going to reset for Mark Paralovas of the People's Party, and we're going to take a little break for some music before that. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was the Lemon Bucket Orchestra from their album Lume Lume. I think they mean lights or lemons, I'm not sure. But anyway, that song was Borisova, and that goes out to Boris Johnson.
I loved it.
What? The Lemon Orchestra goes out to Boris Johnson?
The song called Borisova.
Oh, okay.
We always need to find a tie-in, right? So, yeah, that's like...
It's our philosophy.
I'm going to find the Donaldson song for next week. Is that okay?
Well, let me know how that goes. So we switched candidates during the break, and we're pleased to welcome Mark Paralovas of the People's Party in studio here. Thanks for coming by, Mark.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We're glad you finally made it to campus. And by that, I want to refer to the controversy of the U of G debate that was canceled last night.
Yes.
There was... According to the CSA and the QP 1330, I should say Scotty is technically a member of QP 1334. He's with the electricians here on campus.
Yeah.
Not part of the organizing of the debate, I will add.
Not at all.
Fair enough.
I just work here.
He just works here.
Just a QP member.
He literally just works here.
Fair enough.
They cited safety concerns for students and people here in relation to inviting you as the local candidate for the People's Party. Mm-hmm. I have watched some of your videos on this, and you've obviously talked about freedom of expression and how they were stepping on yours. But it made me curious because there was a town hall here in Guelph back in July that was going to be public at the Guelph Youth Music Center, but it was made a private event, and you cited safety concerns. I'm curious about what the difference is.
Well, the difference is I'm a federal candidate, and this is an election period, and the writ had been dropped, and this is an all-candidates event. The Bernier event in July had very little to do. I do a podcast, a daily podcast about Canadian politics, and I was interviewing Mr. Bernier for that podcast. It was meant to be a show. It was meant to be a conversation with Mr. Bernier, but not in my capacity as an EDA president or as a candidate for the People's Party. It was in my capacity as podcast host. I was interviewing Bernier for my podcast, and I thought the people of Guelph would be interested in hearing from this potential prime ministerial candidate, from somebody who has done a lot in Canadian politics in the last year. I mean, he's the leader of the fastest growing Canadian political party in history, so I thought that was interesting for Guelph. And when we were threatened, so I am going to tell this story, and I'm going to tell this story probably on a video tomorrow, because it ties together, because the same people play into the July event that you're referencing and what happened with the CSA yesterday. And they had lovely conversations about it all over Facebook. And I have a whole bunch of screenshots. And so I think that it's interesting when our democracy gets hijacked by a very small group repeatedly of the same people doing exactly the same tactic to shut down me. I have to tell you, I'm not a very controversial person. I spent 15 years working in children's mental health. I worked in schools and group homes. I worked in situations that required calm even when no one else is calm, right? Like crisis situations. I'm trained in crisis intervention. This is what I do. So, or this is what I used to do. Now I build websites and things, but and talk with lovely people like you. But fundamentally, the July event was a very, very different monster than what is happening on campus here. But it's got a similar question. Like, the core question is, do we want our democracy hijacked by these groups of people who can write letters and be loud with the goal of shutting down the event? And it doesn't matter the collateral damage. It doesn't matter that the students of this university get the short end of the stick because they don't get to hear from the federal candidates. It doesn't matter that the federal candidate himself has his rights trampled all over for free speech and discussing these ideas, because these ideas are hard and they should be discussed. And what better way and place to discuss them than at a university during an election time? This is our democracy at stake. So do we want it controlled by a small group of loud people, or do we want to be able to have the conversation? And you make up your mind, and all of the people listening individually with the information on hand, they make up their mind too. They don't get their minds made up by gatekeepers or people who say that silencing one person is protecting another. It's not.
Right. But let me ask you this then. The debate here on campus was canceled, but I mean, there's a debate tonight down at Centennial CVI that you've been invited to.
Yes.
And you weren't initially, and let's make that clear, but you raised some noise about that.
Well,
it was
before the debate invitation was not forthcoming prior to the federal debate commissioner weighing in on Bernier attending the October 7th and October 10th English and French debates. Once he weighed in, I was invited to everything, and that was pretty much precedent setting. It established that precedent that People's Party is a player on the federal stage, and if the Liberals and the Greens and the NDP and the Conservatives are invited, well, you should probably be fair and invite the other one too.
But what I'm getting at, though, is that you are rightfully concerned about not having your platforms taken away. But at this debate tonight, the one tomorrow at the Arboretum, the one next week that's hosted by the Chamber, there are four Guelph candidates who were not invited to take part.
Right.
Do you stand up for their freedom of expression to be able to take part as candidates in this election?
I think that it is important. Yeah, I think that it is important. Now, let me qualify that, but first, I think that it is important for the electorate to be as informed as possible. And that's why I put my videos out. That's why I do my show. I think that doing that makes me more accessible. The other four candidates who are not being invited to the other debates. Now, I've said on my show, and you can go back into the archives, I can look for it, that I think some level playing field, some meet this standard, it levels the playing field for everyone. Everyone knows what the stakes are. And I don't know that 90% of ridings across the country is the right one, but I'm willing to have a talk about that, right? And I don't know that removing from debates the way that we've seen, or having the elections commissioner, having the his ability to interpret certain factors, that's very subjective. He gets to make a call in a way that almost nobody else gets to make a call, and that impacts our democracy. And we saw the impact of that democracy on that democracy directly when he made the call that Bernier was invited, and PPC candidates started getting invited even where they weren't necessarily welcome before.
Right.
And that's my experience. All of that said, sometimes democracy has growing pains. Sometimes there's a really, really great idea buried within some clumsy implementation or whatever. And that's why we have four-year elections. That's why we have people to say, what about this idea? What about this idea? Why don't we take that part of this idea and do this with it? And that's why we have the transition and the change, right? And not all parties last forever, right? We've seen, although in Canada, there's quite a long history of the Liberals and the Conservatives too. But this Conservative Party is relatively new, right? It's not a 150-year party by any stretch of the imagination. So, and it was built by, you know, Stephen Harper and partially the Reform, and going back all the way to Preston Manning, you know, if you look at that kind of pedigree. But, you know, I think that when we have standards for everyone, when the rules are clear, and when it can't be interpreted by one gatekeeper for the country, it's very clear. Either there's two apples or there's one apple, you know, rather than how many apples do you think there are, right? Like, let's make very clear, measurable standards so that everybody knows and there's not a lot of holding our breath.
Well, I think the measurable standard is that Elections Canada has recognized 9 people for the ballot in Guelph. And for most of the debates, it's just 5 people who are invited to take part.
Right. Well, I mean, as I said, I don't want to necessarily get caught in the weeds of that. There are certainly differences between the 5 parties that are being invited, in that they all of the 5 have candidates in 90% of electoral districts across the country, or more, right? So so there is a standard, and again, that's our democracy. We can polish that coal and hopefully become a diamond. We can't undo it. I mean, I guess we could if there's a majority government and most people want that electoral reform undone. But that's a discussion to happen in the legislature. As far as Guelph goes, I fought darn hard to get my invitations, and I did everything I could to make sure that the people of Guelph saw me fighting, because it's important, because democracy demands it. And so I'm there because I fought hard, and because a whole bunch of people across the country also fought hard to build the EDAs, to get candidates approved by Elections Canada, to get Mr. Bernier in the federal debates. We all worked really hard. And it wasn't just me. It wasn't just me in Guelph. It wasn't just my team in Guelph. It was across the country. And that says something too. And I think that if you have that infrastructure across the country, if you've made that kind of sacrifice to get that kind of following, then yeah, you should have your ideas heard. Yes.
Okay. So do you think the PPC as a party, as a movement, is here to stay?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so. Mr. Bernier, when all the other parties are offering the same thing, and all of the other parties are arguing over what exactly to offer of the same thing, but Mr. Scheer said the Liberal number, 350,000 immigrants per year, is acceptable. I don't think our infrastructure, from housing to roads and freeways, capacity to and maintenance to hospitals, I don't think our infrastructure can handle it. And I think our municipalities are cracking at the seams. And for a federal government like Andrew Scheer to say they're not going to give us a number, or for Justin Trudeau to say we're going to increase but not help the municipalities and increase taxes too, well, I think that's irresponsible. And so all of the other parties are offering a version of the same thing. Basically, we're going to increase your taxes, and it's because you want us to make sure that all of these programs continue to run. But there's a lot of inefficiency. There's a lot of foreign spending that is unnecessary. And just if going back to 2015, Justin Trudeau ran on 3 small deficits to build Canada. That means spending that $10 billion that he proposed within Canada. And that churns our economy. That keeps those dollars within our economy. And so it helps restaurants and businesses because people go and spend money. Just look at what happened to Alberta recently, right? The economy has slowed down and the restaurants are having a hard time, et cetera. And so when we keep that money in the economy, that helps everyone. That helps small business owners. That helps you because you've got more money for your family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because presumably you're benefiting from the jobs, et cetera. But when you have those projects happen outside of Canada, or the new LNG, they had the assembly and everything done with Chinese steel outside of Canada, you're missing out on all that infrastructure. And I don't think that's acceptable either. We have a responsibility. The Canadian government has a responsibility to the workers in this country to make sure that, I mean, Canadian, big Canadian projects like that should be done in Canada. I don't understand how people are accepting that we're shipping all of these jobs and money out of the country and saying this is a benefit. It's not. And especially with all of the controversy currently around China.
I want to tack to that, though, because sure. I think from the way you phrased it, it's government's fault that business works the way it does. But
what do you mean works the way it does?
That business ships jobs overseas, that things are...
No, I'm saying the government. The LNG is a government pipeline I'm talking about. I'm not talking about business shipping anything overseas. I'm talking about government making a decision to do the BC LNG pipeline, the natural gas pipeline, with Chinese workers and Chinese steel and assembly in Canada. So it would all be built there and assembled in Canada pieces. So the jobs are reduced by a factor of... I don't have the factor in front of me, but I've done shows about it.
No,
it's a big deal.
So the message is Canadian government should be funding Canadian workers and Canadian work,
keeping that money.
But
in
what
our
about
economy?
Private business?
I don't govern private business. What do you mean?
Well, I mean,
which specifically private business?
I just mean in general that, you know, we have a lot of big manufacturers who send jobs overseas. You know, car plants that were open here are closed, and plants are open in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And builds cars and parts.
So the People's Party has talked about repealing corporate welfare and then not picking winners and losers, right? And so the point isn't
But you're picking winners and losers for when it comes to building pipelines.
No, I'm responsibly using Canadian taxpayer dollars to make sure that Canadians are enriched by the wealth that our country produces. The taxes we pay to the government are to make sure that we're safe in our country, to make sure that we're taken care of. The provincial taxes are going to healthcare, right? So when you pay into your taxes all through your life, you stop paying taxes or as many taxes because you've got GST and there's goods taxes that you still pay. Mm-hmm. But you don't pay income tax and you don't make much of an income after you retire. And so the idea is that the taxes you pay reduce, but then all of those taxes you paid kick in the programs to take care of you when you're old. But what happens when the CPP is not liquid, not able to continue to do that? And they talk about that every few years, and it's been a little bit. That's not an issue this election cycle, and it's more provincial at this point too. However, when those tax dollars are not managed properly, when those tax dollars are used for who knows what, sent to work in other countries to build infrastructure or whatever for development aid or foreign aid, whatever it is, that is not helping the Canadian taxpayer. So I understand you want to connect this to business, but the government's job isn't to tell business what to do. The government's job is to set the table so the business has the ability to succeed or fail on its merits. And then the market gets to decide, right? So like a good example is if you start a blog about, let's say carrots, okay? Carrot blog 101, doesn't matter. Right? Pick the topic, but let's say carrots.
I can
right?
see that taking off in Guelph.
Everybody loves carrots, right? So you write your blog and you do it for 3 weeks and, well, nobody reads your carrot blog. So that's a failed business, right? Like you tried and you failed. And there shouldn't be as many, and maybe the carrot blog is a bad example. It's something that is relatively easy to do. But business is very similar. You have to try something. And as you're trying it, either people like it and they come and they buy it, or they don't. And if they don't, that's a fail. And if it's a fail, it's not valueless. You learn something, right? And then you can try again. But what's happening is there's all sorts of people saying the government should regulate the businesses and prevent them from doing X, Y, Z. And I'm saying we don't have, we being the government, and I don't want, as a person who participates in business, I don't want the government to come in and say, you have to do X, Y, Z when you're starting the business. How many carbon, because servers, computers for your carrot blog take up carbon. So what's your carbon hit, right? Do you know? No. Well, that's not great in Ontario because that's a problem with the proposed laws, right? With how many carbon tax credits you need to start your business, et cetera. More bureaucracy complicates things. So what I'm saying is I want the Canadian government to be responsible and use Canadian taxpayer dollars to make sure that we enrich people in Canada and make sure that we're all taken care of, right? We've got First Nations with drinking water that are third world conditions. We've got homeless veterans. We've got homeless immigrants and refugees, and we're still sending money outside of the country. Guelph got $1.48 million for homeless people in 2018, I believe. I can reference the link. I've done shows on it. $1.48 million over 5 years, and we sent hundreds of millions of dollars to the Asian Infrastructure Bank. We spent $12 million on parks. So maybe these are different buckets, but this seems like maybe we're not solving the problems we need to be solving appropriately. Maybe there's a management problem. And I've been watching Trudeau, and I would say there's a management problem, and that's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm. I do want to address this before we run out of time, because it is 10 to 6. But, I mean, there have been a lot of accusations about your party, and it's... Well, I'll just come out and say it. There's a lot of accusations that your party is racist.
Yeah, I heard that. And I heard that they said it's because of Western values. Western values are democracy and respect of religious, independent religious choice, and the ability to criticize religion and the equality between men and women. Those are Western values. And there's a few more on the list, and I went through it on my videos. So when people cite Western values as the People's Party saying that it has to be white people, that is showing their ignorance for what Western values are. This is a term that is used to describe democracy around the world and equality and making sure that people are respected not for their race or for their ethnicity or for their religion or how they choose to who they choose to love. That's not how we're supposed to judge people. We're supposed to judge people through their actions and their choices and their words and their deeds. And so when people use Western values to say that's white supremacy, I say to them, your ignorance is showing.
I've heard that. I've heard you say it.
Yeah. I said it earlier today.
Fair enough. But there seems to be, I guess, competing messages. And I'm wondering, like, no matter
competing,
how...
Competing message. Listen, it was very clearly defined. You can't. Right. You can compete message all you want, but if you want to redefine Western values as racist, I go ahead, but I don't think it's going to take off.
Well, I'm not sure people are meaning your definition of Western values.
The definition of Western values has been agreed upon and stated by Bernier as far back as, I think, last year.
I don't think that's the problem. I think it's when they hear a candidate like Brian Evergert say that Islam is a wart on the ass of the world that people need to unite against.
Where did... I haven't heard that. Is that reported somewhere?
That was on the CBC.
I haven't seen that, so I can't comment on it.
Okay. But Bill Capes in Essex said in a tweet, yellow people been working since 5 a.m., black people up at noon, LOL.
I don't know who these people are. So
they're People's Party candidates.
Okay. Well, I don't know when the tweets were. Like, there's no context. So,
tweeted that out.
Okay. Reading the tweets out without context, reading the tweets out.
I don't know what more
unfair
context you need, though.
I have no idea who these people are. I've never met them. I don't know who they are.
Okay. But they're running for your party.
Yeah. Well, it says you. I haven't seen anything. Well, I haven't seen anything to verify that.
You can find it online fairly easy.
Fair enough. But asking me a question right now, I don't know these people, so I'm not going
to
comment.
Okay.
On
but
it.
To get back to what the question was, the cognitive disconnect.
Right. Well, you're trying to. This has nothing. What their tweets say has nothing to do with Western values. Western
I didn't
values,
say it has anything to do with Western trying, values. I'm yes, saying that saying there's a message that the People's Party is racist, and you're saying that the
and I'm
People's
saying the
Party
message
is
folly.
Racist.
And the reason that the CSA cited today, and the reason that I've heard before, is that the immigration policy is racist, and the Western values is racist. The immigration policy is fiscal. And the Western values, I've explained multiple times. So the fiscal part is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, where I was saying that there's not enough infrastructure, both roadways, capacity on roadways. Have you tried to get around Guelph recently? It's impossible. Like, I came here, I left my house for here at 4 o'clock, and I had to go up to Gordon Street, Gordon and Courtright almost just passed. And it took me about 10 minutes longer than it should have taken me, just traffic volume. It's incredible. So infrastructure, housing... We being Ontario, Toronto, GTA area, needed 50,000 new units for rentals last year, 2018. Do you know how many they had? 37,000, two-thirds. So they're missing a third. infrastructure. This has to do with when you tell people that there's opportunity, when you tell 25-year-olds they should be able to buy a house, and when you tell people, come to Canada for the opportunity, there's jobs here, and they get here and they're homeless, and the 25-year-old's moving home because there's no opportunity, the government has failed. This isn't business failure. This isn't anything other than terrible,
there's really no responsibility on the part of business that hasn't raised minimum wage in years.
What I'm talking about is oversaturating the province with zero regard for the municipality's ability to keep up with the infrastructure.
Oversaturating with people?
Not managing the immigration system properly has led to this housing crisis directly. Yes.
The problem,
and that is borne out in multiple newspaper reports. I'll send you the links, and I'll show it to you. RBC came out with a housing report the other day talking about exactly this. And yes, it is a mismanagement, poor management of the systems at the federal level. That's what I'm talking about. Trying to make it about business is,
but Mark,
the business
doesn't
have anything to do.
But Mark, I see help wanted signs out all over town. Yeah, it's
yeah.
So
we're not talking about
we're
not talking about reducing the amount of workers coming in. Not at all. Okay. We're talking about reducing the number of overall people coming in from 350,000 to between 100 and 150,000. And the reason we do that is to make sure that the municipalities can keep up with the infrastructure so that the people who live here in Guelph and in Toronto can find a place to live reasonably that they don't have to bankrupt themselves to stay in, can eat and afford food from Walmart, or sometimes to go out and enjoy food, right? Like, these are the things that people have become accustomed to. And what's happening is cost of living is increasing, the cost of rent increasing because of the pressure. And there's other factors too that are contributing.
Like market speculation.
No, I'm talking about, there's other factors. Market speculation. Yeah, we can talk about money laundering, but I think there's like 5 minutes left. We can talk about money laundering because that gets into fentanyl. That gets into the drug stuff. And that's another big issue in Guelph, but it's hard to get onto all of the big issues in just half an hour, right? But
yes.
But really,
we can agree on that.
Yes, it is hard. And I mean, like, And you and I, not heated, I always really enjoy our conversations. And I'm sorry that you haven't really said much, but I apologize. I talk a lot.
It's okay. I'm just poor control.
Fair enough.
He's on his 26th fisherman's friend of the day.
Love it. Oh, you're okay. You're not feeling well. We can disagree, and that's okay. That's part of a better understanding. And like, I see a lot of my, not pre-thoughts, preconceived notions in you, like, and I'm not just at a different stage, but different experiences create different perspectives and ways to look at it. So I always enjoy our conversations because I know where you're coming from, and I think that it's interesting to have the conversations, and I think that they're important. So I appreciate them.
Okay, well, we do appreciate having you on because I know that shall we say our conservative friends in town sometimes.
They don't come out so much.
So thank you, Mark, and we're glad you're going to make it out of campus alive. I'm just kidding.
I don't know. There was somebody who yelled, "Hey!" when I was coming up here. I was like, "I'm just going to keep walking straight."
Good advice. Keep walking, and we're going to have to walk out of here ourselves. Coming up next week, we'll have Cornelis Clevering and Steve Dick on to continue our candidate series, and that is it for this edition of the show. Thanks for listening.
Can I save my website?
Say your website.
All right. Check out ppcguelph.ca and markperolivis.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. I appreciate it.
Sorry, the conversation got a little heated. But all right. If you'd like to listen to the show again, download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Find us on social media, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, @OS_Guelph on Twitter. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to my news and politics site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I'll blog about the benefits of Fisherman's Friends at spanabook.wordpress.com in the very near future.
All right. And DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then.